Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Caritas. Today it's October 21st, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me. Hope you all enjoyed your weekend. I did not do a podcast Sunday evening for the week ahead segment. While there was obviously some stories that transpired over the weekend, it really wasn't worth updating as far as I was concerned. I'll six in one hand, half dozen in the other as to whether or not I'm going to do a week ahead segment to begin with. I do like doing them. But last week, we were all over the place with different stories. It was pretty much the same story continuing. And it's going to continue to be the same stories continuing well into the end of 2019. One of the stories that we are going to continue to talk about today is this controversy and the story surrounding Boeing. And we did a podcast a couple weeks ago titled GE and GM Trouble at the Plant, where we also spent a good portion of that podcast highlighting some issues around Boeing. And we said, this might just be another crack in the foundation. There might be something more coming down the pike in the near future. Be on the lookout. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. You had some breaking news come across the wires last week that we also did a separate podcast on last week, discussing in depth this controversy that is now surrounding Boeing. And again, it is still centered around the 737 MAX 8 airliner that went down, two plane crashes last year within about 5-6 months of each other. And those planes have been grounded internationally going on for months. And it appears from the story that was released last week that I am at least anticipating that these planes are going to be out of commission probably my guess right now, again, this is a complete guess, into the second quarter of 2020. Now, a lot of airliners, and I think even before this story broke last week, Boeing and maybe even the FAA were anticipating that these planes would be operational within various airlines probably within the first quarter of 2020. But given this news, given the investigations that I think are now going to get a little down and dirtier now because of this, I think it's just going to prolong the entire process. Now, this is, of course, assuming that there is no structural engineering issue with the airliner itself, but taking at their word, Boeing, that this is a software glitch, there needs to be updates to the software system, and that there needs to be further pilot training. Now, if it's just those two things, if it's just a fix to the software system, if it's just more training of pilots internationally, well then, structurally speaking, then the plane's okay. You go through those two upgrades, hopefully everything's okay, those planes can be deemed operational. Now, if they have to dig deeper and conduct further testing, or if something comes to light that Boeing executives really prioritized revenue and profits and getting this airliner to market so they could compete with the upgrades from Airbus, and they put those things ahead of safety, well, then this whole thing's up in the air. And like we described last week in the podcast specifically focused on Boeing, whether they're taking off or nosediving, is Boeing is a huge American company. Very much so a part of the military-industrial complex. So much so that Nikki Haley, the former governor of South Carolina and the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, when she resigned, she is now a board member on Boeing. Okay, so they are entrenched in the military-industrial complex. Okay, there's no doubt about it. They were awarded billions and billions of dollars in government defense contracts, and then, of course, their commercial airline business and a whole host of other things that they are engaged in. They are one of the largest companies in the world. They are a component and a sizable component of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. So if Boeing goes up, Boeing goes down, it can move the stock market all by itself. And we're going to talk about that here a little bit more today when we get to the market news. Now, Boeing, if this turns into something more, as I described in the podcast a couple of weeks ago and what I described last week, if they should go down, if this turns into something much bigger, something much more nefarious, something much more scandalous, something much more criminal, this will be akin to Lehman Brothers collapsing 10, 11 years ago that really kick-started the financial crisis and thus the Great Recession. Okay? This will simply be a manufacturing crisis, but will have the same effect because of the interconnectedness of industry. Steel, aluminum, copper, electronics, computers, glass, rubber, carbon composite materials, plastics, okay? Not to mention the logistics of everything, too. The rail, the trucks to get the goods from one place to the other, the paint, everything, chemicals, you name it. All of those industries will feel the pinch. They'll lose revenue. Their profit margins will get squeezed. They'll be forced to lay people off, and it'll just be a catalyst. And don't forget, who makes engines for Boeing? GE does. And we've had multiple podcasts specifically focused in on GE. Because a couple months ago, we have Harry Markopoulos, a forensic accountant who outed Bernie Madoff in the Ponzi scheme during the Great Recession. He came out and issued a warning that GE has been committing accounting fraud for years. For years. And if history is any indicator, when somebody comes out and alleges that a major corporation is committing accounting fraud, they are bankrupt within 4 months. And the reason he's saying this is because this is exactly what happened to Enron, and that's exactly what happened to WorldCom. When they were outed publicly, they both filed bankruptcy within about 4 months. Well, the clock's ticking. I think that was back in August already, so we got till the end of this year, first quarter of next year. What's going to happen? Is Harry Markopoulos and his team of forensic accountants, are they going to be proven correct? Or is this going to be swept under the rug? Because now it is in the hands of federal investigators. So time will tell on that. But if Boeing goes down, that's pretty much it. Because GE is going to suffer some big consequences because they're going to lose a huge customer. Or at least temporarily. And GE, given their situation, they can't afford to go through that either. So I'm keeping you updated on this. Now the other thing, we have the CEO of Boeing expected to testify before, I think, both a House and a Senate panel at the end of this month, which is just, again, trick or treat. It's Halloween. So much is going to take place between now and the end of October. It's going to be crazy. In October is notorious for being a volatile month in the stock market. You had the 1987 flash crash. What, they lose 22% in a single day. You had, Black Tuesday or Black Monday, and then you have Black Tuesday in 1929. October is notorious for being a volatile month. And don't forget, we still have the Brexit hard deadline on Halloween, and we're going to briefly touch on Brexit here today if I have time. Again, not going into great detail like I've explained here on the past few podcasts. I'm not going to get into the weeds right now with Brexit because they just continue to kick the can down the road. I learned my lesson trying to give this audience a detailed synopsis of what was going on months ago, back in February and March when that was supposed to be the hard deadline. Well, they weaseled themselves out of it, and they continue to kick the can down the road. So I'm not going to waste my time or your time with details that could prove to be completely pointless, okay? But I will give you just a brief update on that. So at the end of this month, we have Brexit. We have the CEO of Boeing testifying. And also at the end of this month, we have the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee, okay? The FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee, is going to be meeting, I believe, on the 29th and 30th of October. And, of course, they're going to be making a decision on interest rates. Well, what do we think is going to happen? Well, they're probably going to cut interest rates once again. Why? You have stock markets that are near all-time highs once again. You have unemployment at a 50-year low. And you have price stability, at least according to their metrics. Now, of course, that's a bunch of hogwash, but according to their metrics, that's what they tell us. So according to their metrics and according to their dual mandate, that being the Federal Reserve, why are they going to cut interest rates? And why are they still in the overnight repo market, pumping into the system tens of billions of dollars on an overnight basis? Why are they once again expanding their balance sheet, telling us that it's not quantitative easing, when in fact that's exactly what it is, because they are buying bonds, or, well, here, bonds are actually 30 years, okay, that's out there. They're buying bills, they're buying notes, they're buying short-term duration treasury bills, okay, 3 months, 6 months, that's what they're getting involved with. $60 billion a month, $60 billion a month. Over the past month, the Federal Reserve's balance sheet has already expanded by $200 billion. That's how much liquidity they have thrown back into the system, okay? Basically overnight, all right, in a month. We had quantitative tightening for about a year, year and a half. Barely did anything to the balance sheet. Now, of course, it had some big ripple effects throughout the economy, but nevertheless, the Federal Reserve was nowhere near normalizing. And I don't want to go down a rabbit hole, because every time I talk about the Federal Reserve, I have to go off on a tangent. Check out our website, thecapitalnews.com, and check out our video, our central bank's trap. That's where you're going to get the best information on this. And we're going to have to continuously update this, because they are once again getting back into manipulating their balance sheet. So $200 billion, you had quantitative tightening, pulling out about $50 billion a month at the high end, $50 billion a month during quantitative tightening in the past month alone, without a formal announcement of quantitative easing, because of course that's not what they're calling it, they've increased it $200 billion. So they've done in 1 month what took quantitative tightening 4 months at its max. And who's saying anything about this? Who's calling this into question? Nobody. Nobody. And now you have Thunder Thumbs and Jay Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, basically simpatico. They're now on the same page. Completely. Because Donny Boy wanted lower interest rates. This doesn't help you out, by the way. Especially if you're trying to save money. This doesn't help you at all. If you're trying to buy a house, I mean, maybe it's going to get the mortgage lower. But guess what's going to happen to the asset price? The price of the house is going to go up. I'd rather have a lower price. That's just me. I don't know. So you got all of this back and forth. And you also had Thunder Thumbs crying for quantitative easing. Well, he's got it. He's got it. So now, if something goes wrong, how is he going to blame the Federal Reserve? He will. Make no mistake about it. He will continue to blame them, even though they are doing what he wants. And again, last week we talked about how the Federal Reserve, this government, the trade headlines, every other type of BS that's out there, they're throwing everything they can at these markets. The ECB printing money, the Bank of Japan getting ready to come back in, the People's Bank of China standing on standby, Bank of Korea, South Korea cutting interest rates, Australia cutting interest rates, New Zealand getting ready to continue to cut interest rates. Everybody, everybody. And these markets are just barely below all-time highs. They're not propelling, rocketing through them. Could they? Yeah, of course they could. But it's amazing that they're throwing everything and the kitchen sink at these markets, and we're still not breaking all-time highs. But who knows? We'll see what happens this week and through the remainder of this month. The question now becomes, at the end of this month, especially with Boeing being a front-page story, is the testimony of the CEO of Boeing, will he be drowned out by Jay Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, in his meeting? What they do with interest rates? Will that be drowned out? Will anybody care? We're going to have to find out. And we're going to find out within 9 or 10 days here. So stay tuned to that. I'm going to take the time again on this podcast to read another article. This one will be from CNBC in regards to Boeing. This is pretty much just a simple update to last week's podcast, but again, I think it's important to keep this fresh in our minds because of the potential crisis that could unfold here on a number of fronts. We're going to get to that shortly. But first to the market news here. We had the S&P gain 21 points, the Dow gained 57, the NASDAQ was up 73 points, an increase of 0.9%. And the Russell 2000, the small cap index, gained an additional 15 points, up 0.95%. The Dow Jones Transports gained 1.4% today, which is a little mind-boggling, and the New York Stock Exchange was up 0.6%. Now, the reason I say that the Dow Jones Transports being up 1.4% is mind-boggling to me is because of what's going on with Boeing and subsequently the airlines that are going to be affected by this, and the fact that you have Boeing that is expected to report third quarter earnings this week along with some of the airlines. But the other thing that is sort of making me scratch my head is the fact that we now have the September report out from the Cass Freight Index. Remember, we did a podcast on this last month that would have been dealing with the August report. Now, the September report from the Cass Freight Index is now out there. It's now being published, has been published, and I am likely going to do a short segment on that probably this week if I have time to get to it. And it is simply a continuation of what we have been reading in that report for the past few months, where the authors of the Cass Freight Index report is saying that, look, nothing has changed, except there is a continuation of deterioration in the transport sector across all modes of transport, air, sea, rail, truck, all of the above. It's a further deterioration. And just like they've been saying, that again, the Cass Freight Index, they are anticipating, they are forecasting that GDP in the United States will be negative this year. We only have two quarters left, folks. We have Q3, which is ended already, and now we're going to have to wait probably another about a month or so until we get the preliminary number out to see what transpired during Q3. And we got Q4, which, of course, we won't get those numbers out until 2020. But according to Cass Freight Index, that report, given what's going on with the transport sector, given the fact that that is one of the best leading indicators out there, that it has a great track record of predicting economic activity to the upside and to the downside, that they are predicting that here in the United States, we will have a negative GDP print either in Q3 or Q4 of 2019. So far from being the greatest economy ever in the history of the United States. Okay? So something to be mindful of. So that's why that's scratching my head. We have oil relatively unchanged from last week. We have WTI at $53 a barrel. Brent, the international metric, is at $59. We have gold pulling back slightly again today. It's now trading at $1,485 an ounce. Silver is trading at $17.59 an ounce. Again, I reiterate the fact, or my opinion, I should say, that I believe that the precious metals are in a bull market. So anytime there is a pullback, that's an opportunity to acquire more. But do your own homework. But I think just as a smart investment, just being prudent and having diversification across your portfolio is a wise move. And given the fact that that the Federal Reserve, that the Bank of Japan, that the ECB and other major central banks are getting ready to truly put the pedal to the metal with lower interest rates and quantitative easing or whatever the hell they want to call it, you have to have something else other than just paper currency in your safe, in your pocket, in your portfolio. Okay? So please, do your homework, do your research, and be diversified. We have the U.S. 10-year Treasury up a little bit today. So that's the yield. So there's some selling in the bond market, and we are now yielding 1.79%. 1.79% on the U.S. 10-year Treasury. Of course, what the Federal Reserve is attempting to do by design is they are attempting to uninvert the yield curve. Okay, they are attempting to uninvert the yield curve, and they have already been successful at doing so. Now, they might think that they are solving the problem by doing this. In fact, this is usually the telltale sign that a recession is now around the corner, because once the yield curve inverts, and we've written articles, this is on the Capital News .com website. This is, we have various videos out there that are talking specifically about the yield curve, and we have discussed on various previous podcasts about the yield curve. So I'm not going to bore you with the details on all the yield curve. There's just a ton of information on our website and podcasts out there to be listened to, and I hope you take the time to do so. But once the yield curve inverts, that has been a very strong indicator, and one that I give a lot of credibility to because I have studied this extensively and continue to study it, that it is likely that it is a good predictor of an oncoming recession. Now, the time frame is always tricky. That's the toughest aspect of it, okay? But to know that the iceberg is ahead is very important. When you're going to hit it, of course, is well, we don't know. But it's there, and it's better knowing that it's there, it's on the horizon, as opposed to, you know, it popping out of nowhere and surprising you, okay? Now, what a lot of people fail to understand is the recession really starts to take place, or is really a lot closer, once that yield curve starts to quote-unquote normalize and is no longer negative. That is to say, it's no longer inverted. Well, that's what we're doing. And this now is by design by the Federal Reserve. So that again is something to be mindful of, and I will continue to monitor that because that's very important. We have the VIX, the Volatility Index, giving back 2% and is trading at $14 even. Quick update to Brexit. Well, they are once again attempting, Parliament is attempting to kick the can down the road. Recall that Prime Minister Boris Johnson was able to get an 11th hour agreement with his counterparts within the European Union. He then had to take that deal back to Parliament for it to be approved in order for there actually to be a Brexit. Well, Parliament shot that down, and now it's to be delayed. Now, however, we are expected to have another vote on the deal. And surprise, surprise, there are now some mumblings and rumors out there that Boris Johnson may just pull a rabbit out of the hat and get this deal approved. Hooray. I mean, this is almost getting to the point where everybody is just sick and tired of this being Groundhog's Day every day. Because that's what it is. Because if you listen to the arguments in Parliament or you read articles of the members of Parliament, the same things that they're talking about, this is so much akin to what we were listening to and what I was discussing here on a near daily basis back in February and March of this year. So nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. You just got, Boris Johnson is the prime minister right now. And you have some people who are saying, well, you know, his deal is worse than Theresa May's. Well, then you should have voted for Theresa May's. But you didn't. But you didn't. And now you find yourself here. So given UK law, British law that they just passed in regards to delaying this thing, because the deal did not pass, it was then incumbent upon Prime Minister Boris Johnson to send a letter to his EU counterparts requesting an extension. Well, he did that. He did not sign it. And he also told them in that letter, I don't want you to grant the extension. So Boris Johnson is sticking to his guns and he's saying, we are leaving the European Union on October 31st. Come hell or high water. So there's going to be another vote. And like I told you, I will keep you updated on those details if there actually is a Brexit. So there could be a lot of volatility within the British stock market and obviously with both currencies, the euro and the British pound. So if you're a currency trader, you might like the volatility. A couple other things before I get to the article for Boeing here. Something I wanted to mention last week but forgot to because we were, so immersed with the Boeing story. Donald Trump was giving a campaign rally in Dallas last week, and he made a statement to the crowd in regards to the ceasefire or the lack thereof or whatever you want to call it between Turkey and Syria, and basically saying, you had to be unconventional and you had to allow, it's like letting kids fight in the schoolyard. You got to let them beat each other up a little bit, and then you come up and you separate them. I personally don't like that. Because if Tommy and Billy get in a little schoolyard brawl, somebody might have a bruised eye or a bloody nose. They can go cry home to mommy, and then they're in school the next day. Okay? These Syrians, these Kurds, and even anybody in the Turkish army or military, they're dead. So it's not the same thing. And it's that same mentality, which is somewhat perplexing, that Donald Trump now states that, well, we might keep a little bit of a contingency over there to protect the oil. So hell with people, hell with their lives, the hell with somebody losing their father or their mother or their son or their daughter, the hell with them, let's protect the oil. That's the same mentality that gets us into all of these endless wars. So I thought that comment of this is like letting two kids fight and then you come and pull them apart, I thought that was despicable. I thought that was disgusting, personally. And then you have a lot of idiots standing behind him, at least you can see in the camera, and I'm sure there was a lot of people in front of him who were laughing it up. People are dead because he did a foreign policy by shooting from the hip, a knee-jerk reaction, and now he has to cover up for it. And we have people dying, but no, we're going to continue to let them do whatever they got to do, but we're going to protect the oil. That's the exact mentality that led to the reason why we got into Iraq. We don't care about the people. You have oil. You have natural gas. We want it. We don't care how many of you are killed. That's the same mentality. And at the same time, Donald Trump wants to say, I campaigned on endless wars and I want to bring everybody home. Well, what did he do with a few thousand more soldiers? He sent them to Saudi Arabia. So what do you want to do? You want to bring them home or do you want to send them somewhere else? So this whole thing just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But that's that. Now to this article on Boeing out of CNBC. Boeing shares continued their slide Monday after explosive messages last week revealed a top pilot had concerns about a system on the 737 MAX that was later implicated in two fatal crashes. Several Wall Street analysts downgraded Boeing, fretting about the fallout from the crisis that has barred the manufacturer from delivering its best-selling planes that make up around 40% of its profit. That's not small potatoes by any means. Boeing stock fell 3.8% today to a two-month low of $331 and change, shaving 88 points off of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. The messages made public Friday included an exchange from a top Boeing pilot to a colleague in 2016 that expressed his worries about an aggressive flight control system on the MAX whose performance he called, quote, egregious. The pilot, who now works for Southwest, said in the exchange that he unknowingly lied to regulators. The same pilot months later told the FAA to remove the system known as MCAS, M-C-A-S, from pilot procedures and training materials. We covered this last week. The FAA said Boeing knew about the messages for months and scolded Boeing in a letter for not releasing the documents earlier. Boeing defended its training materials for the 737 MAX, which regulators deemed safe in 2017, and said it told regulators on, quote, multiple occasions about the broadened capabilities of the now questioned system. So now we're going to have a lot of finger pointing back and forth. Was it these pilots? The lawyers are going to defend them. Is it Boeing? Is it the FAA? A lot of finger pointing. UBS on Monday downgraded Boeing to neutral from buy. Quote, our working thesis has been that the failures on the 737 MAX development by the company centered on fault-intolerant design compounded by poor assumptions of pilot response, it wrote in its downgrade, that being UBS. We now have to append that assessment further based on source material provided to Congress and the FAA on Friday that reinforces the perception of and heightens the potential of incomplete disclosure, which inherently puts more money, trust, and time at stake. Boeing's board is holding a regularly scheduled meeting in San Antonio that concludes on Monday. The board stripped CEO Dennis Muilenburg of his chairmanship on October 11th to focus on getting the MAX back into service. The recent news is putting Muilenburg under more pressure. Some of Boeing's 737 MAX suppliers are also trading lower. This is exactly what we were discussing, how this has ripple effects down the line. Spirit AeroSystems, which makes fuselages for the planes, lost 4.8% today after a downgrade to neutral from UBS. General Electric, familiar name, which makes engines for the 737 MAX and a joint venture with Francis Safran, fell 1.9% today. Stifel downgraded Southwest Airlines, which operates an all-Boeing 737 fleet and is the biggest customer for the MAX in the U.S. Stifel said the carrier could be near a, quote, tipping point where the MAX grounding has gone on so long it could push the Southwest to consider a merger or acquisition, and suggest New York-based low-cost airline JetBlue Airways, which operates Airbus narrow-body planes. Southwest CEO has said it would take years to diversify Southwest's fleet. Southwest declined to comment. Boeing's MAX customers say they've lost millions of dollars in revenues as the grounding drags on. Southwest expects the planes to return to its fleet for commercial service in early February, while American and United are currently targeting a return to service in January. That's the end of the article. So here you have it, folks. You have Southwest, American, and United anticipating that this plane will be deemed operational in the first quarter of 2020. I am growing more and more skeptical of this by the day, because now you have Congress involved. You have Congress involved, and nothing they do is lickety-split, okay? This is going to take a long time. They're going to want to score their brownie points. You're going to have the Democratic presidential contenders all starting to opine on this, talking about, you know, consumer advocacy and safety and how there's regulatory capture because these companies are just too big. They pay people off. They bribe everybody. This is the problem, yada, yada, yada. This is why government needs to be even bigger. Of course, their solutions are not going to, pass the smell test, but that's what they're going to do. So this is going to be political. We're already at the end of the year, so there's going to be a recess at the end of the year for the holiday season. So to imagine that this plane and all of these investigations are going to be wrapped up by January or February of 2020, I think you're smoking something. That's why I'm saying at least until the second quarter of next year. And again, that is assuming that this is not a structural engineering problem. If it's just an upgrade to the software and you have to train pilots a little bit more, okay, maybe in the second quarter. But if it's structural, or if this thing turns into something even bigger, then you, obviously you're going to have to push that even further and further down the road, which is not going to be good for anybody. Believe me when I tell you. So that's where we're going to wrap up today's podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. Please like, share, subscribe, get the word out, and leave your comments. We do love hearing from you. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Kuraitis. Godspeed.